Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
Alrighty, and we happen to have a financial professional in the office, in the studio right now, Mr. Dennis Prout with Prout Financial Design and New Retirement Radio. Welcome back.
It is great to be in. Thank you, Ron. On September 20th, 2018, good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning. We have a lot to talk about. We actually have an interview that Shay did with Tanya Shroka.
Shay Pataja.
Shay Pataja.
Hello.
Did. Welcome, Shay. And I think you will find it powerful, meaningful. If you possibly can, please listen to the full portion of the interview. It's that good. I've already listened to it here this morning. And in fact, so powerful, I asked the staff if they would set aside their work for about 30 minutes while they listen, so that they could listen to it as well. And or it'll be posted on our website to about 2 weeks or so.
Week or two.
We'll have that done. Proutfinancialdesign.com. So this is Life Insurance Month. And what this story is of a couple who did significant planning, but also experienced the very unexpected. And the depth of the story and the honesty and how Tanya is able to bring, I think you'll find, you into her experience. Hopefully will help you gain knowledge about not only life, but passing as well, without giving up too much to the story. And Shay, I'm sure you want to say a few words, if you would, too. Do you want to say anything before this?
I would just, you know, be prepared. It's a deep dive. She goes into detail. And for those of you that have lost someone recently, this might be too much to listen to. So,
good point.
All right, we'll listen to this. What is the lady's name?
Tanya Shroka.
And Shay Pataja here will be back live in the studio in just a few minutes.
Hi, my name is Shay Pataja. I'm the co-host of New Retirement Radio. And today I have in the studio with me a very special friend who has a story that you will want to listen to from beginning to end, even though in some ways she's still right in the middle of it. So without further ado, Tanya, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, thanks for that introduction, Shay. Appreciate it. As Shay said, my name is Tanya Shroka. I am a single mom to four daughters. I have a set of triplets that are seven, and my oldest is nine.
You have not been a single mom for very long, about 9 months. What happened 9 months ago?
That is correct. I lost my husband 9 months ago at home to a very unexpected sudden cardiac arrest.
How old was he?
He was 36 when he passed away. Very young. Too young.
36.
36.
Do you want to share what happened that night?
I would love to. You know, so it was a Sunday evening, December the 17th. It started out almost like any typical night home when Michael was home. And we got into bed. It was our routine. I would always fall asleep before he did. And that's exactly what happened. What woke me was his coughing and gasping. And Michael was an asthmatic. So at first I thought he was having an asthma attack in his sleep. So I, you know, rolled over, patted his butt with my hand and, you know, Michael, do you need your inhaler? And there was no response. And he continued to cough and gasp. And I kind of sat up and turned to look at him. And again, Michael, do you need your inhaler? And he was still unresponsive. And so I got out of bed. And as I got out of bed, he, due to the coughing and gasping, rolled out of bed, fell to the floor. On his way down, he had hit his head on the nightstand. And so I instinctually just ran to the side of the bed. It took me probably on the third attempt to roll him over. And once I rolled him over is when I truly realized that this was more than an asthma attack by that point in time, and his face was already blue. So I ran back to my side of the bed, grabbed my cell phone, and put speakerphone on and called 911.
And how long between you calling and them getting there were you with him?
I was there with him for 20 minutes doing chest compressions on him. It wasn't like your typical CPR because he had vomited, so he had aspirated. So no air was able to go in, and at that time they had said, do chest compressions for as long as you can. And it was a full 20 minutes between the start of my conversation with the dispatcher until that they had arrived.
Where was your head at that point?
Oh, it's in the unknown. It's scary because you're trying to process. You're really trying to process what is happening. But within all of that, for me, I was able to see the beauty within the tragedy, if you will. So Michael passed before the ambulance arrived. And during that time, I had the experience of feeling his soul leave his physical body. So during that moment, my thoughts changed. So it went from screaming at him, Michael, hold on, they're on their way, and counting out loud, because, you know, as you're doing chest compressions, you're counting to keep your rhythm, to make sure that you're doing it correctly. So it shifted from that to, yes, a place of calmness and still a knowing in a way. And the moment that happened, my heart center became ice cold.
Like physically within your chest?
Physically within my chest, it was ice cold. So think of like when you get goosebumps in times like 100 million. It was that intense. And it radiated up from the center of my chest up to my shoulders and down my arms. And that feeling lasted for a good, felt like forever, but realistically probably 2 minutes or so. And the calmness stayed for the amount of time, and then it was gone. And it was within that moment I knew that he had passed. And I would say probably within 5 minutes of that moment is when the ambulance had arrived at our home. And then they took over, you know, they hooked him up to, you know, the machines, they monitored, you know, heartbeat, there was nothing. They intubated, you know, asking all of the questions that they do where it's a whirlwind of questions of, you know, what medicine was he on? You know, what did he eat? I can't even remember. There were just so many.
Right,
it's a blur.
Did the questions even matter, knowing what you knew?
They didn't. What mattered to me, because I am a woman of faith and have a lot of spirituality, so for me it was pray that he'll come back. You know, you hear stories all the time of people leaving their body and coming back, and I was in that pool of maybe 10% that thought, yes, prayer. With enough prayer, we could bring him back. And so I had asked the police officer that showed up that evening. I grabbed him by the shoulders as we were standing in my kitchen. And I said, do you see those two doors closed behind me? And I saw him look over my shoulder. And he said, yes. And I said, I need you to pray. I need you to pray for their daddy. I said, because in one room are my triplets, Stella, Shaylin, and Landry. I said, in that second door is our oldest, Gabriella, and I need you to pray that their daddy comes back.
And how did he respond?
He looked at me and he said, I am a man of faith and I will pray. And then he proceeded to tell me his own story of how he nearly lost his wife to epilepsy episode at their home. And thankfully she recovered, but yes, he did. He said, I will pray. I will pray for you and your girls.
So what happened next?
I was frantically making phone calls to everybody. I was calling my mom, my sister, you know, anybody that I could get a hold of to come to the house. I had checked in with the girls, and, you know, this is how God works in mysterious ways. So I had gone into the triplets' bedroom, and of course they were shaken. You know, they'd seen the lights and they were questioning, you know, what was wrong. And I said, well, Daddy was sick. Mommy needed to call 911 for help. And they said, well, Mommy, we tried to open the door and the door wouldn't open.
Your bedroom door would not open.
Their bedroom door.
Their bedroom doors would not open.
So during this whole process, they had attempted to come out of their bedroom. And by the grace of God, that door would not open for them. It wasn't until I went in, I opened that door and went into their room. They were like, Mom, you know, it wouldn't open. And I just silently sat there and said, thank you. Thank you, God. Thank you, Michael. Because I couldn't imagine how traumatizing that would have been for them to see me on the floor, hovered over their daddy, you know, with with the screaming and the shouting, and then with the ambulance and the EMS team, you know, arriving, what that would have done for them. Losing their daddy just in and of itself is difficult, but to also add that trauma of visually seeing that. But thankfully, that did not happen that night.
When did you get the news that he was gone?
Well, I instinctually knew. It wasn't until I arrived at the hospital, probably, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes later, my best friend Rhonda drove me to the hospital. And Shay, it's just like in the movies. It's that moment where they take you to a room, the doctor walks in, and they just look at you. And that's what happened. She walked in. There were no words. She just looked at me, and I knew. And I started screaming. I started calling his name. And my best friend said, what? What did you say? I missed it. And the doctor turned and looked at her and said, I'm sorry. He did not make it. And she was, you know, tears of hysteria. And I will share with you, during this time, I heard the voice. And I know people say the voice. What do you mean by the voice? So as I'm sitting there with all of this grief, I hear the voice say to me, when life gives you too much, you kneel. And it was just repetitive in my head. And so finally, I started to shout it out to the room. So the doctors in the room, the social workers in the room, my sister, my brother-in-law, and my two best friends. And I started to just scream, the voice is telling me, when life gives you too much, you kneel. And so within that moment, Shay, I surrendered. I surrendered to the voice. I fell to my knees and just sobbed and grieved. It was powerful.
So my guess is that some listeners might be thinking that this is too soon for you to talk about. It's only been 9 months. And you and I met this winter, and you told me the whole story. And I walked away from our conversation thinking, it is too soon for us to be having this conversation, for you to have this much clarity about what happened and about what was going to happen in your life. But we are both women of faith, and so some things are just, bigger than us. And so today I want to talk about that. Because Michael had a career.
He did.
That set you up for something just like this. And when we met, you said, I need other people to hear our story because it could help them. And we both said we'd wait until it was time, and you felt like it was a good time. And so here we are. It's the beginning of August of 2018, excuse me. So can you go into that? Can you talk about what Michael did for a living? And the signs that showed up after his death.
So Michael worked for a company. He was the district manager. He oversaw three states. So he had Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And one of the things that he sold was life insurance. And from a very young age, or I should say a young Michael and Tanya life, he knew the importance of life insurance. So that being said, we first signed up for a life insurance policy, and that was the year Gabriella was born, which was 2010. And so then, yes, moving forward, you know, he knew the importance of making sure that his family was taken care of and, you know, tidied that all up. And the joke always was, you know, with us, you're better off without me, you know, like, right, like every man, you know, like, oh, the money's there, you'll be great, like, don't worry, we're set, and
I'm worth more.
I'm worth more to you dead than I am alive.
It's the joke,
it's
right?
It's the joke. It truly is the joke. Mm-hmm. But that ended up being, you know, our saving grace in a way. You know, when he did pass, it was that moment of his boss showing up the next day after he passed. Literally, he flew out the next day, which was amazing to deliver, you know, the life insurance check to me. And Shay, I'll tell you, it was that moment where I realized this is bigger than me in a way. Like, it wasn't about the money, right? I looked toward his boss and I said, oh my God, I don't want the money. Just take it, right? Mm-hmm. Because what I wanted was my Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get past that, you realize what you still have. I may not have my Michael, but I still have the house that he worked so hard to provide for us.
Mm-hmm.
I still have my vehicle that he, again, worked so hard to provide for us. And I still have my community of people and friends and my loved ones. And it was with that moment where I realized how blessed we truly were, because every day somebody is born and somebody dies, and they're not prepared for that. They think it's not going to happen to me. I'm too young. I'm healthy. And then it happens, and they're not prepared, and they're losing their house. They're losing their car. They're losing their community. And then that loved one, whether it's, you know, a wife or a husband, is left going, now what? What do I do? How do I grieve? How do I go back to work? And how do I help children navigate this? How do I do all of that?
They've got a lot of blank spaces to fill.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On top of the grief.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about the letters. He left you letters.
He left me lots of letters.
We'll be right back. I'm in the studio with Tanya Shroka. Tanya lost her husband December 17th of 2017, just 9 months ago. He was 36 years old. He sold insurance for a living, and because of that, made sure that his family would be set up should he pass away unexpectedly. Little did Tanya know that would be exactly what would happen. Thanks for being here today, and thanks for sharing your story, because I hope that it reaches a few people out there who are listening, even those who've lost someone and benefited from the same planning. So thank you.
Thank you.
So Michael thought ahead in a lot of ways. Tell us about the letters, if you feel comfortable sharing that.
I would love to share the letters with you. So Michael and I, so he traveled for work. So let me back up here a smidge. So with his traveling, became that moment of how do you stay connected as a married couple? So I was a single mom Monday through Friday. Michael would be home late Friday nights, and we'd have him Friday, Saturday, and then he typically would leave again on a Sunday. And, you know, our joke always was, you don't bring 50-50 to a relationship. It's always 100-100, because even on your best day, you're not going to show up. But when you come together in a partnership, you bring that 100%. So we always worked really hard on nurturing our relationship. And part of that started with me one day going to Target, buying those little notes for a dollar, and taking the time to be intentional, to sit down, to let my husband know how much he meant to me. And I would place them in his luggage, or I would pin it to like the inside of a suit jacket pocket, or tuck it in folded t-shirts. And so as he was unpacking for the week, you know, whatever, let's say Wednesday, there was something in a shirt for Wednesday, and he'd find it. Well, he was a smart guy, so he caught on really quick, Shay. And so he started mailing letters back to me when he was on the road.
And letters that he wrote?
Letters that he wrote, yes. You know, in words of encouragement and, you know, just I'm thinking of you. So the day that he passed that evening on the 17th, like I was saying, the next day his boss had come out to deliver the check. And I knew his boss also needed to take some of his work belongings with him. And one of those, we were looking for some documents. So I was going through his briefcase. And as I was going through his briefcase, I found a stack of letters that had been written. They were sealed, addressed, stamped, and just ready to go. And it was a saving grace emotionally. It was that I still have words. I still have his voice. It's here. It's in note cards. And I was guided by spirit, if you will, by
the voice
on when to open them. So I did not take them out of order. I left them in the stack just in which I found them. And I waited. I think most people would have maybe torn right into them that day, you know, like, what do these cards have to say? And I heard, wait. And so I waited. And a couple of days went by, and we hadn't checked our regular mail. And that morning, my sister had, you know, arrived and had come with the mail. And in the mail, there were two cards from him. And again, it was that moment of, how did you know? Right? Because that was also part of the story. Michael, at one point in time, had told me that he knew that he would pass away at a young age. And for me, I said to him, well, how did you know? Were you told? Did you see it? And for him, he had just said, I've just always known as a young boy that I'm going to die early. And we had just gone through a cancer scare, and we were in the clear. And so the joke was, cancer is not taking me. Like, I'm going to live to be 60, 80, like a good life, right? But, you know, to him, that was still young. 80 is young. But but a piece of him, yes, did know that he was going to die young. And to have the letter show up, for me, it was that piece of, oh my God, how did you know? Because then what was written in the letters, it, not typical things that you would write. It was deep, very deep and meaningful. So the card that, you know, I had originally opened that came in the mail, it was, I love you more than words. You have this. You know, you travel all the time. So it was meaningful to me because stay-at-home mom, four children. Here we are, his busiest season. We're coming upon the holidays, right? That's stressful for everybody. I think everyone listening can relate to that. But it just resonated more because it was now in this moment that he's gone, he's telling me I have this. He believes in me. I have this.
Quite the premonition. And so you had, in a lot of ways, practiced being a single mom and unknowingly knowing what this would be like.
That is true. And I have my moments where I thank God for that, when I sit in the quiet, because I was prepared. And I'm thankful for that every day, because I think knowing that I could do it, I had been doing it for 7 years because Michael had worked for the company the year I was pregnant with the triplet. So I had 7 years to know that I could do it, that I could handle it. But it still doesn't want your loved one, you know, or, you know, for them to be there with you, even though you, you know that, you know, you can move forward. But I also think that that is part of where my resiliency, my bounce back came from as well, knowing that I could do it because I have done it. And it's also what Michael would want. And then for me, it also comes back to being able to say goodbye to him in the hospital. And the three things that I said to him, so, you know, they wheeled me down. And again, it's like in the movie, Shay. They wheeled me down to the room where he was. And the doors opened. And there he is on the bed. And there's this beautiful light overhead shining down on him. And they wheeled me to the side of the bed. And I was stroking his hair. And the first thing I said to him was, I'm sorry. And everybody in the room said, what are you sorry for, Tanya? And I said, oh man, I'm so sorry for being angry. I was mad because he was gone all the time. It was Monday through Friday, right? Here I am, single mom. I'm doing this, but I own it. I do it, right? I'm resilient. I'm a warrior. my God. But wow, in this moment, I'm so sorry for those feelings of resentment, because you were doing what you needed to do to support our family. It's a double-edged sword. And then the second thing I said to him, as I was stroking his hair and holding his hand, I said, oh, Michael, I need you to come to us. I need you to let the girls know that you're here. So whether you visit us in dreams or whether you show us your signs, however that sign comes, please, please, please do that for us. And then the third thing I said to him was, I have Team Shroka. I have this. I promise you I will not fail. I promise you I will get up every day and I will take care of myself and I will take care of these children. I will not let you down. I have Team Shroka. And with that promise, Shay, every day I choose, because it's truly a choice, I choose to get up and to show up and to be a warrior and to have forward motion. That's my two words, my phrase is forward motion, because it's really important, I think, for people to hear that, because within a loss of anybody, it's easy to get stuck. And I'm here to tell you that you can grieve and love at the same time. And you can grieve and still get out of bed. And you can grieve and still find joy in the day, that it is possible.
Hmm. I think it's Mary Oliver's poem that says, we shake with joy, we shake with grief. My, what a time these two have housed in the same body.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Did he show up for you?
He shows up every day. Every day he shows up. So right after he passed, he showed up with light flickers, you know, the electricity, things of that nature. But how he shows up continuously every day is heart-shaped symbols. So whether it's a leaf, whether it's a rock or bark, or I'll walk into a store and there's a poster with hearts all over it. Every day it's there. Just this morning before I was leaving to come here, we were cleaning the kitchen and Gabriella says, Mom, look in the sink, there's two hearts. And sure enough, in garbage, of all things, is a heart-shaped message from Michael. Mm. And Mom, right there, look at in your tea bag, look at the way after you dumped it into the sink, it formed, sure enough, heart-shaped. And the beauty of it too, Shay, is the more we talk about him, the more the signs show up for us.
It's really beautiful. I really love that, because so many people, after someone passes away, stop talking. You know, they stop saying the person's name. Mm-hmm. It's so painful to grieve and to try to live and try to push forward at the same time, like you said. So let's just move on. And move on from that person. And I love that you guys keep him alive and the memories alive. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come up back, I want to finish the story and talk about where you're at now and who you're trying to help.
Okay.
All right, welcome back. My name is Shay Pataja. You're with New Retirement Radio. This is a pre-recorded show with my guest, Tanya Shroka. Tanya's husband passed away at the age of 36. He sold life insurance and other types of insurance for a living. And because of that, had his family set up just in case he were to pass early in life, which is a premonition that he had from a young age that he would.
Mm-hmm.
You said that he left you letters.
Mm-hmm.
Were there other ways that you had evidence that he knew something was coming soon?
We would always talk about funerals. What do you want at your funeral? And I think that's a really hard conversation for the majority of the population to have, let alone when you're young 30s. So, I mean, this was early 30s. We would sit and have conversations about, if I was to die tomorrow, this is what I would want you to do. So I knew right down to the music. I knew the flowers. I knew how he wanted to be dressed, because we would have those conversations. And I know a lot of our friends and family thought that that was really weird. They're like, why are you guys talking about this? You know, because it does. It freaks a lot of people out.
When you're a couple in your 30s, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just interesting. But I knew. Mm. So I knew. So having that conversation. And then, you know, Michael would always say, if I were to die tomorrow, I would want you to be happy. And I would want you to have what I call as forward motion. So, you know, the conversation always was, so if I die tomorrow, would you remarry somebody? And Michael's answer was, no, you're my one true only. And I would date, but I would never recommit that way. And I would always say, well, I would want to be remarried someday. And he would say, whatever makes you happy, because ultimately at the end of the day, that's what makes me happy, to know that you and the girls are happy.
Mm.
But again, to even have that kind of a conversation,
sure,
to know where we both stood with the other if something tragic was to happen. And then, yeah, the conversation of just him knowing, that premonition of knowing I'm going to die early.
What gives you peace now?
Oh, boy. What brings me peace is the stillness and the quiet and the love and the gratitude and forgiveness.
What do you want our listeners to hear?
I want them to hear the importance of planning, the importance of having those difficult conversations, making sure that your family is protected. So making sure that, yes, you do have your life insurance policies in place, no matter how young or old you are, for that matter. And to know that life is precious. We take it for granted. And I want people to know to really enjoy the little things, because at the end of the day, that's where the power is. It's not in the big, extravagant things that we think, you know, the trips, the jewelry, the gadgets, that it's the smile that you received from your loved one that day, the hug from your child, holding the door for a stranger.
Mm.
At the end of the day, those are the things that really matter. But protect your family with the life insurance. Have those difficult conversations so you know. So the day that you're sitting in a funeral home, you're not struggling with, I don't know what my husband or wife would want.
Mm. Yeah, and isn't that amazing? Because of my background in the ministry and the church, I attended so many funerals, probably a lot more than most people my age. But everyone wants to honor the person that passed, even mm-hmm. if they didn't like them.
Yes, that's true.
They still want to honor them. And so you want to be able to focus on those things and not also how are you going to pay for this,
mm-hmm.
the stress of that. And he left you with peace of mind and all of that.
He did.
If you could talk to Michael right now, if you were given this clear connection,
mm-hmm.
what would you want to say to him?
Thank you. Thank you for loving me the way that you did. Thank you for loving me the way that you still continue to do. Thank you for showing up with signs for the girls and I every day. And thank you for being a man of your word and for just loving and being kind. It's gratitude, Shay. It's gratitude.
Well, I wish I would have known him. So what's next for Tanya and the girls?
That's a fantastic question. I would love to be a motivational speaker. I would love to raise the awareness of the importance of needing life insurance policies, because I do feel when we're young, we underestimate them because we feel invincible, and to know that we're not. I would also like, you know, to speak not only about that, but also about what it's like to be a widow and a widow at 40 with four children, and what that journey has been like, what it will continue to be, and what it means to have forward motion, because I think that that's really, really important for people to know that you can have that within a tragedy, within a loss of a loved one, that you're capable, that you're resilient, and that you're brave, and that it's there, that we all hold the key to be able to do that for ourselves.
I think you have a book in your future.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yes. No, I do believe that. So thank you for going there. Yes, within Michael's passing, I've been doing a lot of writing. And to me, it's beautiful. It's depictive of where we've been, where I've been, with all of the emotions, the ebb and the flow. And just, yes, said love story as well.
If listeners want to get in touch with you, I think it'd probably be best if we just have them contact me, and I'll be the conduit for you to get everybody connected. It's one of my favorite things to do, is to connect people with the right people. So if you're listening and you would like Tanya to speak at an engagement that you have, if you would like to connect with her about her story, she would like to do that. So give us a call at the office, 947-3992. Ask for me. Also, send an email, shea@proutfinancialdesign.com, and I will make sure that you and Tanya are connected. I want to say thank you for sharing your story. I know that it hasn't been that long, and it's still fresh. Mm-hmm. But you are probably one of the most unique individuals I've ever met. And
thank you.
Your resiliency and your ability to articulate what happened and to find peace with it and grieve simultaneously is really important and unique. And I think it's a story of hope. And I want this show, I always want our radio show to be about hope. So thanks so much. And we will touch base with you again to let our listeners know where you're at.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you, Shea, for doing that interview. I hope it went to the heart of many to be able to think through, you know, life can be short, mm-hmm. obviously. And sometimes we're in mourning. That is the circle of life, mm-hmm. and facing the old death. Not always fun to think about, but man, a critical part of life to just breathe into that, bring it home. Bring the story up close and so personal. Really appreciate it. That's great.
And thanks to Tanya for
yes.
being willing to do that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Tanya. So just a few points in terms of why and how you might want to own life insurance, why I own life insurance. For lost income, to replace a lost income, number one, because you're no longer here to provide it. Well, okay, that makes sense. Why would I want to do that? Well, because there are others depending on you. And to what extent is the amount of income you need to protect to cover expenses, to cover the basics? Basics could be education as well. That's the first thing that comes to my mind for most who need life insurance the most, is probably lost income in children, in maintenance of the house, perhaps. If your house is a big house and it needs maintenance, you guys are working on it all the time, you may want to consider what it's going to cost to maintain that on your own if you're not the handy person, if you will, okay? Three, debt coverage. We want to get that debt paid off so we don't have to think about, he or she doesn't have to think about it if you're not on the scene to help cover that debt.
Well, for example, student loans aren't forgiven when someone passes, right? So if you're a co-signer on your children's student loans, would you then do a life insurance policy for them?
That's another great point. So if you've co-signed for your children's college debt,
mm-hmm.
You may want coverage. You may want coverage on that child if he or she leaves the scene, which is, man, up close and personal too. Likelihood, obviously, of that is even more remote than you passing away. But if you want that covered, given the amount of debt that has been created through that school 150,000, 200,000 is not out of the realm anymore. So that's another reason to consider that. Creating an estate, a part of this is, you know, we haven't had enough time yet to do the savings to get to the savings level we want. Part of it may be income. Part of it may be creating the estate for both husband or wife and or the children as well to create the dollars there. And as Tanya so perfectly said, the check was delivered. That check is totally, in almost every scenario, totally tax-free. It's without ties. Mm. So the deep level of security that that provides for those who receive it, I've seen those who receive it in the attitude that that brings to them, the amount of calm, peace, and just security, knowing that this check was delivered and I can just deposit it in the bank and it's good, we're good to go. Mm-hmm. We can use it for life to get us through this phase here. And oftentimes, those policy values can be given and done within 1 to 2 weeks. It's not always the case because there obviously may be difficulties in the death that have to be determined and or, you know, proved, whatever. But in most cases, that's going to be very, very immediate. Equalizing an inheritance. I thought this was a great point in some of the materials I'd read because I often think about it in terms of clients. For instance, we're a couple, we've got this big piece of real estate here, and the one child we want to inherit that because they've got that real estate happens to be tied to a business or whatever that may be. Well, the other children, how is that child that's going to, we'd like to inherit that, able to pay off the others? In essence, almost in a form of buy-sell arrangement, if it's a business. That child can do that through an appropriately written buy-sell arrangement that causes those children who aren't part of that business to be able to sell it to that child who wants it through that buy-sell arrangement with the benefit of the life insurance paying the proceeds for that sale. All of a sudden, everyone's made whole very quickly. It's amazing the power of this. It's amazing the emotion of it, too. Well, you know, I don't know that I want to spend all that money on life insurance. I get it. It's not cheap. Keep in mind, there are many varieties of life insurance, especially if you are trying to create an estate that's relatively significant and you're young and you have to control the cost, especially. That can be done through types of term insurance, most often recommended 10, 20, 30-year straight terms that are good for a level period of time and usually more significant amounts of life insurance. So, again, Tanya's brought this up close and personal. Things happen, and so when the worst happens, we can't always plan on it, obviously, but we can push that responsibility back to a quantifiable piece where we can say, given that the worst has just happened, we can solve it through the amazing power of the inheritance through the life insurance policy.
And what's kind of neat, when we do the financial plans at the office, this is something that we take into account when you're looking at the big picture.
Yes.
So it's something, it's a big player.
We all joke that, you know, once you got this solved, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to happen. But the same reason we might have a power of attorney, a will, a trust, thinking of all of those types of things that could happen, but just dealing with it. You know, it's a possibility, so let's get it covered. All right?
I think a lot of people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to cause it to happen or jinx it. There's some superstition there.
Yeah, jinxing it.
I think we found a stat, too, that only 50%.
More than half of adults, 51%, own life insurance. Obviously, then that means 49%
right.
do not. So it's about 50-50. 43% say that life insurance is too expensive. Yeah, I just say too expensive for what? You know?
If you need help with these things, call our office and meet with Dennis or Heidi, both of our advisors. The number at the office is 947-3992. And thanks again to Tanya for sharing her story. Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes.